David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and this is Stacy from The Advisor. And today I'm very excited because we have Ellie Young on the show, and she is an alcohol-free coach. And I'm very excited to have her on the show because she has some amazing tools and strategies and things to tell us to help you become alcohol-free. So, Ellie, tell people a little about yourself and what you do.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me, Stacy. It's an honor. So I'm an alcohol-free life coach. I've been doing coaching formally for about a year and a half now. I'm 3 years alcohol-free after sufficiently pickling myself through the pandemic and homeschooling. And I was certified with This Naked Mind as an alcohol-free life coach about a year and a half ago. And I coach women, and we do group programs. I do one-on-one coaching, and it really has provided me a ton of purpose and passion in my life. Because after I got alcohol free, the impact it had on my health and that of my families was profound. And to be honest, I really couldn't keep my mouth shut about it. I felt compelled to pay this gift forward and to share this with as many women as possible.
I think that's great. You know, COVID hit people very hard emotionally, physically, and, you know, being confined in your house, you know, people felt really, it was very frustrating for people. People became depressed. People were going through anger issues because they didn't want to be in their house and they were forced to do something they didn't want to do. And, you know, some people just being in the house alone, you know, when you're not outside and you don't have the freedom to just walk around and enjoy life and to interact with other human beings, it could be very depressing. So a lot of people were tending to go to alcohol and use that as a tool, as a coping mechanism. And a lot of people even use food as a coping mechanism. And, you know, but it's really hard when people, you know, have to, you know, they don't know how to deal with their emotions. So they use something to help them, you know, deal with their emotions to make them feel good. It's kind of like a comforting source. And for you, like, you know, how did you know when it wasn't just casual drinking and it became a problem for you?
Yeah, well, I think I followed the normal trajectory that most girls do, you know, partied through college, binge drinking was normalized. I was an athlete in college. I played Division I college soccer. So I was definitely a part of this athlete party scene. And then young adulthood, you know, became like, you know, happy hours. It became more of like a symbol of adulthood and status to, you know, go out and be able to spend money on fancy drinks and go wine tasting. You know, there was so much more of a sophistication to it at that phase of life.
Yeah.
When I became a mother was definitely when my drinking turned into what I would call like benign social fun and celebrating to like a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
But again, this was conditioned into me as well, that it was normal to reward myself as a mother for the sacrifice, for the hard work, for the sleepless nights with that glass of wine. And, or like girls' nights out, it was always this way of saying, oh, you know what? You deserve this. You've worked so hard.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, you know, I never had questioned it. I definitely had red flags, I would say, but again, they're so normalized. Like I had blackouts, I had, you know, crushing hangovers. But as a mother, I wouldn't really allow myself to ever be hungover. I would power through it. I would still get up early with the kids. I would still work out really hard. I would deny myself really any bad feelings because I would say, well, you're fine. It was almost like to accept a hangover would be to accept that I had I had to stop.
Yeah.
And so I pushed through it. And then, you know, ironically would reward myself again with more alcohol.
Yeah.
And so that little cycle kind of continued, and became exacerbated during the pandemic because I had a third grader and a kindergartner at the time. And we discovered during homeschool that my third grader had ADHD. They had kind of hinted at it during his school years. He was always the wiggly one, had the special chair, had to sit on the outside of the circle because he couldn't sit still. His third grade teacher at his last conference said, you know, it looks painful for him to sit still.
Yeah.
And so we were just starting those conversations with his teachers when the pandemic hit, and it was a nightmare. Like, he couldn't sit in front of that little computer. He couldn't follow. He didn't know what was going on. He was hitting all the buttons. He was running, getting up and running around. Yeah. And I, you know, I thought I could do it. I thought I could manage the homeschooling, and I took it personally that I thought I was failing him.
Yeah.
And there were lots of tears and lots of yelling. And every day I'd wake up thinking like, okay, I can figure this out. I can do this.
Yeah.
But I just slowly started drinking more and more to cope with that. And finally at the end of 2020, it was New Year's. I decided I'm going to try dry January. You know, I really knew I needed to make a change. I don't think I had fully confronted how destructive it was in my life. Again, because I was afraid of the shame of what that would even mean, right?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to look at themselves and say, I'm singling myself out, that I'm different than the rest of everyone. Like, I have a problem. While everyone else gets to enjoy this substance, I don't. And I learned later in my training and in all, you know, all of the recovering that I did, that there was nothing wrong with me.
Right.
You know, I was using an addictive substance that I'd been conditioned to use.
Yeah.
And it really took me waking up. And so that first dry January, I failed. I didn't make it all the way through, but it was at that point that I realized this is bigger than me. Like, this is, I need help. And that's when I just started diving into tons of Quitlet books. And I hired a coach actually myself that I used for 4 months in addition to a therapist.
Right.
And when I got clear and got healthy, I was now able to help my son and get him the help that he needed.
Right.
And everything just snowballed from there in a positive trajectory, because I was no longer blaming myself for this problem that was going on with, you know, my son.
Yeah.
And it really allowed, that clarity really allowed me to make a huge change.
You know, a lot of times, you know, people, you know, they use the coping mechanism, and a lot of times it stems from their root cause. It stems from something going back in their childhood or something traumatic happening in their life. And, you know, it kind of sticks with them, and they, you know, they start to use other things to cope with life as they go along. And then sometimes it just escalates and it becomes, you know, worse and worse and worse. And sometimes they just right away, they'll use alcohol or they'll use food as a way to, like, you know, just cope with emotions that they have, that have kind of like traveled with them and just kind of leached onto them through for years. And, you know, for you, do you feel that, you know, some of these issues that you were dealing with in your present moment of your life kind of filtered back from either childhood or traumatic events or things happening along the way that just kind of escalated to the point where you just needed something stronger? You needed that quick fix type of thing.
Yeah. Again, I don't think there was ever a really conscious moment of me saying, you know, alcohol is going to help with this. I think it was just a subconscious self-medicating at some point. And yeah, the work, again, I wasn't aware of it when I was doing it, but now that I've had 3 years to look back on it, I think, like a lot of women, I felt that I was not worthy unless I was like overachieving to the max, right? And staying busy and self-sacrificing as a mother. And I almost used alcohol as like fuel for that versus trying to cope. It was more like, I have to get through this.
Yeah.
And I have things in my life that I'm dissatisfied with, but I can't speak up, right? I'm afraid to speak up. I'm just gonna, you know, get through it and keep quiet.
Yeah.
But in an oddly like overachieving, you know, super mom type of way. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. I just kept taking more and more on.
Yeah.
And it's a people pleasing coping mechanism as well here, where you don't want to say no to anybody.
Right.
And, you know, I actually have my podcast myself, and I have a whole episode on people pleasing and alcohol, because my relationship yeah. with my husband with young children was, I don't blame him, but I took on everything, but I enabled that. Mm-hmm. And then I drank to cope with it.
Right.
I just went, oh, woe is me. You know, I have to do these things. And I think a lot of women get stuck in that place instead of kind of putting their foot down and asking for what they need.
Yeah.
A lot of the discomfort in early sobriety is that you're no longer going to be numbing that dissatisfaction in life anymore.
Yeah.
That anxiety and that discomfort you feel is kind of like, it's forcing you to make a change. It's forcing you to set some boundaries and to say, like, I need help with this, or no, I don't want to do that. And who am I? Like, you know, I don't think it's...
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good. Except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
I really believe it's so difficult for women with young children to even get to a place where they can even confront this, because there is just nothing but self-sacrifice at that phase. But a lot of women in their 40s start to be able to find their voice and their feet again, because mm-hmm. their kids are older and they have more autonomy, and they're starting to recognize, like, whoa, there's like a person inside here who hasn't been listened to, who yeah. hasn't been taken care of in a really long time. I have just been numbing myself with alcohol,
yeah.
pretending I'm living my best life. You know, we dress it up as like, woohoo, this is me mm-hmm. drinking my fancy wine. And yeah. At the end of the day, it was making us sick. And it was compounding our anxiety and our depression and our loneliness. And that's really like the moment I want to like just shake people and be like, this isn't helping you. There's yeah. a whole world out there that you can live and that doesn't require you to numb yourself with a neurotoxin.
Yeah. And I feel so many women, I actually know so many women that actually will, they take everything, they feel like they have to take on the world, and it's their duty to. And so many of them, you could just see they're worn out looking. They're just tired. You could just see their face. You could see the way they look, and they're not as spunky as they used to be. And they're not dressing themselves up like they used to be. And all they're focusing on is everybody else but themselves. And they feel guilt and they feel shame if they don't. You know, and self-love and self-care is all the way on the bottom of the list for them, when it should be the first thing on the list. Do you find that?
Absolutely. I think it's, alcohol is the biggest pacifier for women, and it's kept us down. It's kept us small. And again, it's been marketed to us as this solution, as this glamour, as this, you know, permission to use it as a way to cope.
Yeah.
And you know, I joke that like after a long week with my kids, I would have had more mental struggle with like, you know what? I need a massage.
Yeah.
I'm going to go treat myself to a massage. That would have seemed indulgent. That would have seemed like, oh, you know, mm-hmm. I would have felt guilty. But yeah. drinking a bottle of wine was like, oh yeah, of course. Go for it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just so backwards, right? That like yeah. what bodies and what our brains really needed was this self-care that we felt guilty giving ourselves, but yet poisoning ourselves is like completely okay.
Yeah.
Just like, wait a minute, how did we get to this place? Right.
Right. I think sometimes we're not honest with ourselves too. We're not looking at what it's actually doing to us. You know, we might know deep down inside, but kind of put it on the back burner, you know, and we're just looking at, okay, it's making me feel good, you know, and that's all that matters, because it's taking off the edge. And that's all I need right now. But they're not looking long-term. They're just looking for that moment, because that's all it's going to be. It's going to be for that right. moment. And then reality is going to set in. And I think that's when the, you know, I know you're not crazy about using the word alcoholism, but that's when the alcoholism and the addiction kind of sets itself in, is when, you know, you get the, you're drinking, you're feeling great, you know, and, but it only lasts for so long. And then you're going for another one just to make that feeling continue and continue and continue. And then, you know, a couple of drinks turns into, you know, more drinks, and then, you know, a drink the next day and a drink the next day and a drink the next day. And before you know it, it's become habitual. It's like it's a habit. It's the only way that you know how to cope, because you've done it for so long. It's like when you wake up in the morning and you have a cup of coffee every time you wake up in the morning, becomes a habit, you know. Right. So for some people, you might be getting a cup of coffee. Somebody might be getting a glass of wine, as crazy as it may sound, because they'll take off the edge as soon as they wake up, and then they'll start their routine and do their other stuff. But, you know, I know so many people that were, you know, using alcohol and they were drinking early in the morning because they were just, all the emotions from the previous day were with them the next day when they woke up to reality, you know. So then they just needed that fix, you know. And that's not a way to live life, and that you can't function when you live life like that, you know. So go ahead.
Oh no, you're preaching to the choir here. I fully believe that people are unaware of that they're battling their own biochemistry. And yeah, the nature of an addictive substance is what it does to your chemistry, and it creates this craving within your body. If you don't mind, I'll go into like the science here a little bit.
Yeah, please do.
It's one of the most powerful lessons that people can learn that will help them debunk the belief that like alcohol helps me manage stress and anxiety, because you're right. They're after that 20-minute buzz, but that's it. Your blood alcohol rises for 20 minutes, and then your body recognizing this kind of out of balance state, it's a huge dopamine boost, right?
Yeah.
It then course corrects with a neuropeptide called dynorphin. Mm-hmm. And dynorphin is essentially the opposite of endorphins. It mm-hmm. pulls you below your dopamine baseline, creating a little void. It creates like anxious feelings, discomfort. And that's, we interpret that as the buzz wearing off. And we're like, oh, I just need another drink. But that next drink never pulls you up as high as that first buzz.
Yeah.
Because your brain is really adaptive. It is saying, we don't want to get out of balance like that again. Keep pumping out dynorphin. And what it does is it essentially just starts to pull you lower and lower and lower with each subsequent drink.
Yes.
And the brain then course corrects from that with adrenaline and cortisol. So that's why you wake up at 3 a.m. with your heart racing, with irrational thoughts, and you're just flooded with anxiety. And that unfortunately lasts a lot longer in the system, days, than that buzz. So we're literally trading 20 minutes of a high for like days of discomfort and anxiousness in our body. And when you're drinking regularly, you are chronically, that's why they call it a depressant. You are chronically low because your brain is anticipating that at any moment you're going to flood it with too much dopamine with this drug, essentially. Yeah. So it proactively keeps you in a low depressive state.
Right.
And this is a function of tolerance as well. So you'll notice after you drink over time, you need more. So it doesn't just work on alcohol though. Your pleasure circuits, it now needs a lot of everything to make yourself feel good. So like the little things, a sunrise, holding your child's hand, you know, seeing the flowers, gentle breezes, things like that, that used to register like a lovely little dopamine boost, you don't even feel it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's what most people aren't even aware of. Even if you're just like, oh, I'm a social drinker, it's impacting your pleasure circuits in this way. You're not feeling the full breath of life anymore.
Right. Exactly. No, that's so true. That's so true. Now, for people that want to become alcohol free, what would be, you call step one? What's step one? Because a lot of people want to be alcohol free. They just don't know where to begin.
Yeah. I know. I think that willpower comes into play here, where people think it's really only a matter of me just trying really, really hard. And it starts to feel like this marathon of deprivation.
Yeah.
So I try to back up from that and say, what is it that is causing us to feel so deprived?
Yeah.
And it's really these beliefs. So we start with the mental side of things. We start with hacking those subconscious beliefs that are keeping you craving. And so the most popular ones that everybody experiences are like alcohol helps with my stress and anxiety. Mm-hmm. We investigate that. Is that really true? And then, you know, we teach them the science. And so it takes time to kind of chip away at these beliefs because it's like this huge structure sitting in your subconscious that has been built over decades and decades and decades. And so even though we have this like conscious desire to change it, it's up against this huge system that has been telling you alcohol is the answer for so long. Yeah. And so once we start to kind of deconstruct that old belief, we have to replace it with a new one. You have to find a new belief that better serves you. And if it's like, okay, now I know alcohol is not helping with my stress and anxiety, it's making it worse. What does help with my stress and anxiety? What can I tell myself in this moment? And it's usually like, I need a walk outside. Mm-hmm. I need more sleep. I need some self-care. I need some time alone, right? Yeah. And mm-hmm. often those things are difficult to incorporate in our life. It's a lot easier to reach for that bottle.
Yeah.
That friction we feel is growth. That is change. And it's going to be uncomfortable, but it's the right thing. And it's the healthy thing. And so we train our brain then. So after we work on these subconscious beliefs, we then hack the physical habit. And we have to say, now we have to replace this habit with something that feels good. We have to train our brain to crave a new behavior that delivers a dopamine boost. Because your brain is like, I want that boost.
Right.
I want something. And so I go through a process called dopamine stacking with people where we start to build in rituals and behaviors that are going to help you slowly, incrementally stack your dopamine so you feel good. Yeah. But unfortunately, nothing gives you as big a high as alcohol does, right? Nothing is that fast or that easy. So it becomes, you know, a systematic lifestyle approach where we're like, we're going to wake up in the morning. We're going to carve out 5-10 minutes of our day to tell our system.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
We're going to love you today. Yeah. We're going to nourish you. We're going to take care of you like we would a baby today.
Right. I love that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what would be like step two? So if once you start to realize, you know, that it's a temporary high and you realize that you have to start chipping down those beliefs and creating a new lifestyle, a new healthy lifestyle for yourself. Mm-hmm. What would be like the next step for somebody? So now you've worked through the science of it. You're understanding the concept. You understand what it's doing to your body. You understand why you're reacting and why your behaviors have changed so erratically over a course of a specific time, however long you've been drinking. Because I've seen people, you know, they, like you said, they go to that extremity where, you know, just little things don't make them happy anymore. It's either nothing or all the way, you know, because they just can't, they don't know happy medium anymore. That doesn't even exist in their vocabulary anymore. So once you realize all this, and now you understand why you behave this the way you do. So what would be the next step for people that they would have to start to understand and start to work towards?
So this is the part where we hack the physical habit. And so I've adapted this from James Clear, Atomic Habits, where we get really specific about our environments that we're in. Mm-hmm. And we start to work on the cue, the craving, the response, and the reward.
Right.
And so each little step of that physical habit has a place where our brain is going, oh, we're cued to drink right now.
Yeah.
And so we work on those cues. We work on the craving aspect of it is where that mental side comes in. Because the craving comes because we believe alcohol has some sort of perceived benefit in the moment. And so once we've worked on our subconscious beliefs, we'll recognize it because we've pulled it out of our subconscious and we're saying, hey, I caught myself. I'm stressed out. And I thought this bottle of wine is going to help me right now.
Right.
And you now created this little buffer of space to go, wait a minute, how should I respond here? Should I try to hop on that autopilot loop that wants to drink? Or should I try to use a little more energy now to push myself into that new behavior? And right. help my clients do is you have to have a go-to strategy at your fingertips. You have to have a toolkit, because if you're caught off guard, you know, your brain, it's lazy. It wants to not think. It wants to get on the tried and true loop that we've done over and over again. It takes more energy, it takes more friction to try this new strategy. And so we rehearse. I help my clients rehearse mentally over and over. What are we going to do instead? You know, what is our strategy that has that dopamine stacking built in?
Yeah.
And you rehearse it just like an athlete does. Mm-hmm. Because the more you can just imagine yourself doing the thing you really want to do, a little neural pathway starts to form, and you just need to continue to strengthen that and strengthen that. And I also love to play with visualization with my clients, where we say, what would it feel like 30 days from now that you've been living alcohol free? And we meditate and we visualize this, and we get really, really, really specific about how that feels in the body. Because when you do this, this is just another neuroscience trick.
Yeah.
You're not only forming those little neural pathways, you're literally creating the possibility in your brain by just imagining it.
Yeah.
And you're giving your brain a future sampling of this, and it starts to release the feel good chemistry associated with that. Cause your brain doesn't know the difference, right?
Right.
I love this trick, because we can make ourselves sick with worry, right? We've all experienced that. We can literally change our heart rate just from thoughts alone.
Yeah.
And adrenaline and cortisol starts flooding our system, right? We can actually do that in the positive way.
Right.
And when we do these kind of manifestation visualizations of like me 30 days from now, alcohol free, thriving, sleeping, exercising, you know, having great relationships, you know, having integrity, fulfilling my goals, that when you get really clear and imagine that, your brain is like, yes. And it starts to like release all that feel good stuff.
Yeah.
And it strengthens that neural pathway. And all of a sudden, that now exists in your brain. And so now when opportunity presents itself for you to lean in that direction, it's easier, because it's had a little taste, and it's like, oh, I want that now. I want to make that happen. I want to make that.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. So when you're working, do you incorporate meditation on a daily basis? Do you have people like just working on really understanding their inner self, because then they really can understand what their needs are? And, you know, is that something that you do, like when you go to the next step, and, you know, when you have them on their way of changing their lifestyle, is that something that they do?
Yeah, you know, everybody's different, and everybody can adapt to these strategies kind of in their own way. Yes, meditation is definitely something that is part of the toolkit, but I have found for people who that's too big a leap, that we do things called awe walks, which is like a moving meditation, a walking meditation, where we go out, you know, I mean, I say we, but I don't go with them, you know, but they get up in the morning and they go outside for 10 minutes and they experience the walk with all five of their senses, where they really tap into like feeling the air passing through their fingertips. And what do they see? What do they smell? What do they taste in the air? And really just tuning in to all five of those senses. And I call it an awe walk, because awe is an emotion that you can access better when you are alcohol free, because you are more tuned in to your intuition, and you start to feel small, and you start to feel the bigness of the universe, and just it quiets the ruminating mind, and it has all these profound health benefits. And so I tell people, like, you don't have to go to the Grand Canyon. You don't have to see a sunrise. Sorry, my dog, Cody. You can just access this in your own backyard, or just going for a short little walk around the block, and tapping into that healing pharmacy that's just within you. It's all within you. And that's what's so amazing about being alcohol free, is you're like, oh my gosh, I have been using a neurotoxin to try and feel good. and I have it all inside me.
Right. That's amazing. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And when people are going towards the next step, because a lot of times people are very fragile when they're coming off of alcohol and they can't handle a lot. You know, that's one of the reasons why they go to alcohol in the first place, because they're having a tough time just handling a lot of things in their life. So when you're moving them to these different steps, is there another step that you go to once you've branched out and you've really, you know, have this idea of, you know, what you're doing? So one, you break the belief, you break the habit. Two, then you start to really, you know, understand yourself and understand what you really want for yourself. And, you know, and you name some ways of doing that. And then what would be the next step, you know, after that?
It's really about creating a life that you don't feel this need to escape from. And being really intentional about taking really good care of yourself. And so it's building in these rituals that really start to reward your nervous system and reward your circuitry. So yeah, what the three-step process is really like, hack the mental beliefs.
Yeah.
Then hack the physical beliefs. Mm-hmm. Or, I'm sorry, the physical habit.
Yeah, yes.
Then we build this life that we don't have to escape from.
Right.
And that's where all the other healing and health kind of efforts start to stack up one by one, and you just start to feel amazing. And so where I have kind of taken my clients in this next phase, once they feel control with the alcohol,
yeah,
start going into hormone balancing, because most women have realized that, like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize alcohol was making me feel as bad as it was. We've all been kind of just accustomed to low hangovers and anxiety and depression. So once we remove that, then you can really fine tune what is going on with your health. And you're like, oh, okay, I can feel my body. I can listen to my body because I'm not in recovery mode all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm not chasing it with caffeine or like supplements. And so now you have this opportunity to really, because most women are already doing all the things. We're all trying the exercise and diets and supplements and, you know, meditation. We've all, you know, we live in a very mindful, healthy world now. There's lots of opportunity to do these things.
Yeah.
But if we were drinking, it really was setting us back in every aspect of the of those efforts.
Yeah.
So the hormone balancing is often the next step that I do with my clients. And it's a natural progression because you're going to be so in touch with your body once alcohol's out of the picture, and we can start to fine tune the hormones.
And how do you do that actually? Like what is the process of that?
Well, I have like an assessment that I take you through that I've adapted from a variety of experts that I follow. And after we kind of, and we do all this without any blood work. So I'm not a doctor, full disclaimer, but I have a lot of experience doing this, not only with myself but lots and lots of clients. And what we do is we start cycle syncing. So first we become very aware of our cycle. A lot of women, unless you were trying to get pregnant recently, we're kind of unaware of our cycles. Especially.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Are the different hormonal needs at the different phases of our cycle. And if you're like me, I was someone who was trying to diet the same all month long. I was like trying to be low carb, trying to work out hard all the time. I never changed anything, right? Other than like maybe working in a rest day or two when I was like too sore or too tired. And I had no idea that that was impacting my hormonal health and that actually I should be phasing in, you know, different diet styles and phasing in exercise intensity levels. And that would better support my overall health.
Yeah.
Awareness of our cycle is kind of the first step. And then we start cycle syncing where we are adjusting our nutrition and adjusting our exercise levels and lifestyles to match our hormonal needs at the time.
Right.
And for most women, that means dialing back. It means eating more carbohydrate. It means resting more and going inward. And again, listening to our bodies and what it really needs.
Right. Yeah. A lot of women, all women really, when you get to a certain age, and it could be any age, you know, like I started going through perimenopause at 39. So it was like, you know, it could happen to you at any time. You know, some people are later, some people are early, you know, but it's recognizing that you're changing all of a sudden. And a lot of women don't even realize what's going on because it's just, you know, they're just clueless because that, you know, they've never experienced this before. They just know that they don't feel the way they used to. And just these things are happening to them and they have no clue why it's happening.
Exactly. And alcohol plays a big role in that, right? Because it's probably the biggest factor. A big thing I teach my clients is this kind of hormone hierarchy, and that cortisol and insulin kind of sit at the top and they impact the release of all of our sex hormones, our estrogen and our progesterone. So you can't really fine tune your estrogen and your progesterone, which are causing all this havoc in perimenopause, without addressing your insulin and your cortisol. Mm-hmm. And alcohol affects both of those dramatically. Yeah. It wrecks our sleep and it raises our cortisol level chronically. Mm-hmm. And with that going on, it's really, really hard to balance your hormones. Yeah. And so we really have to start at the tippity top and then work our way down. So cortisol, managing stress levels, is another kind of angle that a lot of women were just unaware of how much it's impacting us. And it really does get to that place of like, where are you on your priority list? Like, are you, we all say we don't have time, mm-hmm. and we're all self-sacrificing and we're all working and we're all managing so many things. But if we're not making our health a priority, all of this is for naught. All of the diets, all of the exercise, it's working uphill.
Yeah.
And so you have to really go to the tippity top and say, I need to take care of this cortisol. And for most women, that means cutting the alcohol.
Yeah.
And then you can sleep. And then we can start fine tuning that hormonal balance.
Right. Exactly. Now, do you have any advice for people who have high cortisol levels? Because there's a lot of women who suffer from high cortisol.
My best remedy for high cortisol is movement. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be intense. It can be as light as you need it, but you have to move your body. And so what high cortisol does is it releases stored sugar. Your liver thinks, oh my gosh, we're in fight or flight mode. You have to be ready to like run away from a tiger. Although most of this stress is in our minds, right? It's a perceived threat and it floods our system with sugar, thinking that you need to run. And oftentimes we're sitting at a desk or we're driving in a car and we're not able to use that sugar. So insulin rate rises and then it just stores it as fat body. Mm-hmm. So when you feel that flood of cortisol, one of the best things you can do is just get up and go for a short walk. You're basically just telling your muscles, hey, utilize that sugar that's now in your bloodstream. And it takes it out of the bloodstream, which helps lower your insulin. And it can just be jumping jacks. It could be some air squats, you know, wherever you are. People think I'm the crazy lady at the soccer field because I do a lot of like aerobics on the sideline. And mm-hmm. every now and then I get some other moms to join in with me. But you know, that's really what it is. And it doesn't have to be like, oh, you have to get to the gym for an hour every day.
Right.
It can be set a little alarm on your watch or your phone to get up once an hour and just do some movement mm-hmm. to help pull that blood sugar down, lower your insulin, and that is by far the most effective method.
That sounds amazing. And because like so many women, because of the high cortisol levels, you know, they're getting belly fat around their waist and they're not, you know, they're like, what am I doing? You know, like I'm eating right. I'm doing the same thing I've always done. And it all reverts back to your hormones, your cortisol level. And, you know, people, I'm getting older. It's probably my metabolism, but a lot of times it's also based on your hormones and imbalanced hormones.
Yeah, you know, as our estrogen starts to fluctuate as we get older, as it starts to decline, so progesterone declines much faster than estrogen. And so that is often what people are experiencing perimenopause is like lower progesterone, which can result in estrogen dominance, which is all of the bad PMS symptoms you can imagine. We just think, oh, my PMS is bad. No, that's estrogen dominance, right? But then as the estrogen declines, it means that our ghrelin goes up, which is your hunger hormone. So we are naturally hungrier as our estrogen declines, and our leptin, which is the hormone that controls how satiated you feel, that actually goes down. So not, we're hungrier and we feel less full and we're not sleeping. So our cortisol is elevated. It's like this perfect storm for women to gain weight and redistributes from our thighs and our butt to our low belly when our estrogen dips as well. So it all can be, we can't eliminate it at all together, but we can reduce the severity of it and take as best care of ourselves with stress management, with cycle syncing to fine tune that hormone balance. And you can really do this with just food. Mostly diet is like 90% of it. Then you can supplement and then eventually, you know, go on some hormone replacement therapy. There's no need anymore. They used to be so afraid of it, but now all the new science is coming out that this is how women can have live better lives. Estrogen has over 400 jobs in the body. And why are we not supplementing that as it declines in our older age? Is like you 100% should be supplementing it.
Oh, for sure. 100%. 100%. Now, if you had to take everything we talked about today and you had to summarize it, you know, with a couple of good points that you'd like to emphasize on, what are some things you'd like to emphasize to the listeners?
You do not have to suffer this decade of your life. Alcohol is not serving you, and change is possible, and it doesn't have to come from a marathon of willpower. One of the best things you can do for your health as a woman in her 40s going through perimenopause, menopause, is to cut alcohol. That is the first step. And you don't have to be as extreme as me and say never, ever, ever again, but moderation is difficult because if you're still believing that alcohol has some perceived benefit for you, that's going to keep you in craving mode. And so once you learn and you debunk all these beliefs about alcohol serving you, your desire goes away naturally. And so that you aren't going to be in this place where you're like, oh, I'm missing out. You know, I can't, I can't, I can't. You're going to be like, wow, my life is so much better. And I feel so much better being alcohol free. It starts to feel like a privilege. It starts to, and you'll want to share it with everybody because you're like, this is the best kept secret ever, the best kept health secret. And don't shy away from the idea that, like, yes, you will lose weight. Yes, you will reverse age. Your skin will look better. You're going to sleep like a baby. And it starts there. And to not be intimidated by confronting a change in your relationship with alcohol, because there is no shame in pursuing your ultimate wellness.
100%. Now you offer something on your website. You give a free download. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yes, I have a hormone balancing checklist. This is just like a 10-point checklist that is covering some of the foundations of what I talked about. Of course, you know, cutting alcohol is number one on there. And yeah, so people can go to my website. It's at findmyselffree.com and they can download that for free and join my community. I also have a podcast. It's called Find Myself Free, the podcast. And I kind of split my time there between alcohol and hormone balancing. That's a great resource, a free resource for people to go and get to know me better and my story as well.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. And what kind of services do you provide for people?
I do group coaching. I'm currently in the middle of a 28-day, it's called the Balance Challenge. So we are learning to cycle sync. We're educating ourselves about our hormones and perimenopause and menopause. And a piece of that is also learning to cut alcohol. And then I do one-on-one coaching. So if someone wants to go deeper and wants a more personalized, tailored approach, they can work one-on-one with me.
And they can find all this on your website?
All of this is on my website. Yeah. In addition to the balance challenge. So that is kind of the next one you'll have to stay tuned. Get on the wait list. If you can get on the wait list there, because I am not sure when I'm going to be rolling it out, because it'll be summertime with my kids and it makes it a little more challenging.
Yeah.
But I also have a evergreen digital course called the Brave Course to kickstart your break from alcohol. So I designed this because I know a lot of people are intimidated by hiring a coach.
Yeah.
Even though we hire nutritionists and we hire, you know, personal trainers, hiring a coach to work on alcohol is like, oh, I don't know. Is it that serious? Do I really need to do that? So this is something you can start with, and it's a done on your own self-paced coaching course. It's 20 different modules, and you'll get me coaching you through some videos, and it goes through this whole subconscious deprogramming, habit hacking, and creating a life that you don't have to escape from.
That's amazing. Wow, this has been great. Thank you so much, Ellie, for coming on the show and providing us with all this information. I think it's so important because people struggle all over the world with alcoholism and trying to become free of alcohol, you know, and it's a hard task to do. So, you know, what you're doing is great. And you're showing them a very unique style of getting off of alcohol and, you know, and what's ahead. You know, you're doing it in a very mindful way, in a very natural way, and showing them all the different options and giving them the opportunity to have a new life. So that's amazing. And I thank you for that.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I want people to recognize you're not giving up anything. You're gaining this incredible life. And focusing on that is going to fuel you towards that.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Well, thank you so much for being on this show. I really appreciate your time.
It's
you're welcome.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.